Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Motormouth podcast with me, Tim Sylvie. This week, we're chatting with Laura Winter, one of the team presenting F1 TV. She's covered all sorts of sports on her way to Formula One and has some very sound advice for those looking to make their own way in sports broadcasting. We chat all about her career, her thoughts on the current state of Formula One, what to look out for during the rest of this season, and we get under the skin to find out what makes her tick. It was a real pleasure getting to know her. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did recording it. Please give us a sub, a follow, a review wherever you listen. But for now, let's get on with the show. Laura, welcome to the show. Great to have you here. Now, we like to go back in time a little bit and find out about our guests and what's shaped them. So take us back to your early years. Where was home? Who were you as a youngster? What sort of led you to become the person that you are now?
Hello. Thanks so much for having me on, first of all. And great question to start. I have always loved sport. I think that's one of the main things to put across. I kind of lived and breathed it. I was a swimmer competitively growing up for 12 years for my sins. Yes. So I was the kid at school that stank of chlorine, that was falling asleep in lessons because I'd been up training in the morning, all of that. And I loved watching sport as well. So whether it was football, rugby, swimming, the Olympics, Wimbledon, whatever kind of sport it was, I was watching it at home. And I wasn't particularly very good at sport, though. That's kind of the weird thing. Certainly the more traditional sports like your netball and your hockey. I was good at swimming, but not very good on land. I wasn't very coordinated, basically. But I just knew that I loved sport and that I just found myself in it. And I never saw me being a girl as any barrier to me doing sport or talking about sport at all. I was completely naive to that until I was about 18, probably. A sporty kid, loved sport. I was also theatrical, which my friends will laugh at when I say I loved drama. I loved plays, acting, theater, and did a fair bit of that and carried that on through to theatre studies for A-level as well. And I loved English too. So plenty of reading, writing, and that's kind of, I guess, shaped who I am now today as well.
Is there a singing voice in there?
Oh God, there is, but I've not had anywhere near enough gin on this Friday lunchtime or any, actually, just to be clear, I am sober. And we're not in a karaoke booth, but if we were,
No.
Then there'd probably be a performance or two up my sleeve.
We can make this happen because Harry, who I often do this show with, who you know, Harry Benjamin, he's obviously went to RADA, darling, and fancies himself as a bit of an actor, a bit of a singer. So we'll get the band together one day. I keep finding out these talents that people have got. Like we had Lawrence on here not long ago.
Oh yeah,
and he obviously loves his squash. So I've challenged him to a game of squash when we're next at the same race together. So we can have a sing off in a karaoke bar.
I would love that. I'm not doing Japan this year, which is where obviously everyone goes to do karaoke. But there's a bar here. So I grew up in Gloucestershire, and I've moved around a fair bit, and I've still have moved back to where I grew up. And there's a bar that's about a 5-minute walk from my house that has the whole works, like the bowling, the darts. So I'm awful at bowling, terrible at darts, but then the karaoke booths, probably a bit better at.
There we go. That's the point. And on the aquatic theme as well, rowing, I gather you were into your rowing as well.
Yeah, so when I stopped swimming, I was at university, first year of uni, doing English at Loughborough. And I said to myself, okay, let's do something that's a bit more sociable and for fun. And within about 2 months, I was training like an insane number of hours a week, up at 5 a.m. once again, out on the water in the freezing cold rowing. And I kind of fell in love with that sport as well. So I think the message there is that I don't do things by halves. I'm not very good at half-assing something. I'm kind of all in, all or nothing type approach.
Yeah. Is rowing as hard as it appears? Because I've never been on the water. I've used a rowing machine in the gym and, you know, whacked it on level 10 or whatever, and it's hard going. But is that in any way comparable to what it's like when you're actually on the water?
So actually they say for the water, to replicate the water, probably more like a 7-8 actually replicates the water, but it's also based on how strong you are and how hard you pull and your weight and your height and all that kind of stuff. But it depends on the conditions. That's the thing with water. So I still struggle to walk past or ride, cycle past a body of water, be it a lake or a river, and not comment in my head or out loud on how difficult or easy or lovely or awful or otherwise it would be to row on. So basically, if you've got a headwind and it's wind against stream, you're going to end up with what's called white horses, which is where there actually are tiny little breaks in on the surface of the water. It's choppy, it's slow as hell, and it's incredibly bumpy. And so much of rowing is about balance. So you can be the biggest monster on the rowing machine and you can pull the best split and be super fit, and that's great. But if you can't sit in a boat with others, balance that boat and row in synchronicity with everybody else within your crew, then you're not going to move it. And similarly, if you haven't got a feel of the water and you're rowing in a single, for example, then equally you're not probably going to move the boat as quickly as those who may be able to pull slightly less than you on an erg, a rowing machine.
An erg,
they're called the ergometer. Yeah. Right. That's what we called them.
Every day's a school day.
Bloody I know, hell. An erg. Well, there you go. We're going on a tangent already about rowing. But yes.
I told you we would.
I loved it. That was my first job, actually, was in the World Rowing Federation. I did social media and communications. And that kind of set me off on a path of working in international sport. So yeah, rowing formed a big part of my like early 20s, and I loved working in the sport a lot and still do. I go back and do Henley Regatta when I can, when it doesn't clash with F1 or silver. It always clashes with Silverstone, which is a bit of an annoyance, but rowing is an amazing sport.
Yeah, very cool. Now, broadcasting, so you get your job in that world that you mentioned, presumably that led on to certain things in broadcasting. What was the path? Where did that side of things come on your radar?
I love it when it's explained like that and it sounds so simple.
Yeah.
And I wish it had been.
So not.
So basically I started off in social media and comms and went to the Olympic Games in 2012 with World Rowing Federation. And like a London 2012 Olympic Games first of all, was insane. Like a home Olympics is bucket list stuff anyway. To do it when I was 21, 22, I was like, this is wild. And so what I was there and I loved it, but what I was watching was those broadcasting journalists, reporters, presenters, and all I could think was that I want that to be me. That's what I want to be doing. And so after 2012, both the Olympics and the Paralympics, I left the World Rowing Federation, came home and did 2 years working on on the regional sports desk here in Gloucestershire, at the Gloucestershire Echo and Citizen, and learnt so much. My goodness me, working for a sports desk, only female on the desk, proper grassroots sport as well. We're talking like schoolboy rugby, schoolgirl netball, the grassroots rugby, you know, the local leagues, kind of like five leagues down from the prem. I was covering all of that every Saturday. But I learned so much doing that. And obviously equally learned a huge amount. My reporting came on leaps and bounds. Writing stories, how to write for newspapers, that was a skill set I learned. And that's still a skill set that I use now in how I write intros or how I script questions, for sure. But what I wanted to be doing was what I'm doing now. And it was about finding a way into that. And I didn't have a clue how I was going to do it. What I started doing on the side as freelance projects was sport presentation. So when you go to a big sports event, for example, you'll see the big screens, you'll see the announcers, the hosts, all of that. I started off presenting there. And that's one of like the best grounds to learn, because you can make all your mistakes. Obviously, it matters, and it matters deeply. I remember being so, so nervous, but you are making your mistakes in front of a live audience. Nothing's really filmed and captured for everyone to laugh at for years to come. You learn a huge amount because you're in a very, very live environment. You have a gallery talking to you as well. So you have feedback, you have comms. So you're already thrust into a live environment. And that's how I learned presenting and started getting my opportunities within netball, both junior, world, and then Commonwealth Games as the stadium presenter. And once I started doing bits of this on the side of working at the newspaper, I so quickly got the bug and thought, I have to make this my reality, my 9 to 5. Well, it's not 9 to 5. Freelancing's not 9 to 5, but I have to make it somehow my life. And so I basically quit the newspaper with about one client. I earned about £40 in my first month freelance.
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And I think the amount I earned, I'd actually spent in petrol getting to the football ground. Anyway, and then basically, yeah, from there, it kind of just snowballs. I started off working mostly in cycling, and bit by bit, you get more and more opportunities coming your way. Word of mouth is important, doing a good job somewhere else, someone recommending you and picking you up. And that was sort of worked mostly in cycling through to 2019, when rugby and then motorsport came knocking.
And motorsport has continued to be a growing area for you. You've done Extreme E, and many of our listeners will know you most from F1 TV. For those that, for whatever reason, don't know F1 TV or haven't experienced it yet, just give us the elevator pitch. What is it?
So F1 TV is Formula One, F1's own channel. So all of the YouTube content, the Instagram, all that content we can generate as well. So we will present bits and bobs that go onto there. But F1 TV itself is a subscription app. So kind of like your Sky Sports or your BT Sport or whatever you pay a monthly amount for, and you will get basically every single thing you want to know about Formula One from this app. So you get all the onboards, you get exclusive camera angles, you get telemetry, you get the race radios, you get the pit channel, you get everything you could possibly want. And you also get shows that are pre and post sessions presented by the likes of me, Will Buxton, Lawrence Barreto, and so on. So
good.
And, yeah, it's amazing.
And nice people to work with. And we know Lawrence, and we've had Will on the show as well. And he's also a man of many talents. So we've got, your acting. We've got Lawrence in his squash. And Will is an incredible artist, and he's a musician as well.
I thought you were going to say musician, but yeah, no, he's amazing. Yeah. Will is so multifaceted and so talented, and he has so many deep passions in a variety of areas. I mean, I said earlier on that I'm all or nothing. My God, that man is all in on things. You know, he can't just like the Beatles or like Oasis. He will be like deep into the archives of whatever else. It's his knowledge across so many subjects is amazing. I think he'd be the perfect pub quiz teammate for sure. Yeah. Far better than me. He's amazing. He's super, super talented across so many aspects, not least Formula One and presenting. And he's a wonderful co-host.
He is. And he's a character, isn't he? And he's got an interesting voice, and he's got his own unique way of putting across a message on screen. And I like him. I'm a fan. I think it's a good bunch. It's a good group. Now, you've built up all this experience over the years, and we've sort of gone through your trajectory there. And when you're talking through it like that, like you said, it always sounds simpler than it is. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people that listen to this who are either content creators that want to get into broadcasting or want to be presenters. What advice can you give to people who are maybe 18 years old thinking, I just don't know where to turn? And there are tools at their disposal, but you know, if you don't know, you don't know, do you? So
for sure.
What sort of pearls of wisdom can you give people who are just sitting there lost, thinking, I know I can do that job, I just don't know where to turn?
Yeah, it's one of the most asked questions I get on Instagram and in my DMs, and I wish I could reply to everybody, because I think one thing, it's almost a cop out of an answer, but it's equally, I hope, promising, is that there are so many different pathways. There's no set route that only a certain number of people or a certain type of person can go down. There are so many different routes in to getting into presenting, into broadcasting. I went down a route in which I did 4 years of experience in different areas. And then on the job at the newspaper, I also did a degree in sports journalism as well, a qualification. And so that taught me an enormous amount. And I think that will pay dividends for the rest of my career now. So I would certainly say if you are able to find a course, a degree, find a college, find a university in which you can get a qualification, be it in broadcast journalism, sports journalism specifically. That is one of the surefire ways to get started on the path, because you won't necessarily be offered a job right at the end of it, but you are going to make so many contacts throughout that time. You're going to be doing work experience, you're going to be meeting local people, you're going to be meeting radio stations, television stations, and that is invaluable. And I actually wish, looking back, that I had gone down that as a route for university instead of doing English, because English was lovely, but it doesn't necessarily give you a job at the end of it. And I think now that university is so much more expensive, and you know, we've got social media at our hands all the time as well, people can get so far ahead in different ways. So I think going for a degree initially, as soon as you know what you want, is really crucial. If you can, and I appreciate not everyone has the means to, absolutely. I would then look at doing work experience again if you have the means to. I did plenty of work experience, nobody should work for free, but it is a part of this industry in which you do go along, be it sort of through school or through a college, and you work at your local newspaper or radio station or television station and pick up bits of experience that way too. I think so many people say to me, I want to work in Formula One, and I never started off working at the very top of any sport. At all. You know, I started off, my first job was in the under 16 national netball finals announcing. So I started off so small. To me at the time, that felt like my Olympic Games. That felt like my Silverstone. You know, that was such a big deal to be working. And I think while it's amazing to have a goal in mind right at the very pinnacle of what you want to be doing, very few people are going to make it straight there. And I remember one person once saying to me, don't be impatient to get to where you want to get, because if you get there too soon and you don't do a good enough job or you're not ready, you won't go back, because people will remember that you're not good enough. And I found that really, now looking back, I find that really valuable advice, that you will get to where you want to be, but you have to do it in time and you have to have the experience to do so. I think gathering as much experience as you can, working across different sports, broadening your knowledge, your skill set is so important. So while you may not want to be doing editing, for example, or be in the gallery or be writing, you want to be presenting. I did all of those different things because I wanted to have an understanding of what it takes to be a broadcaster in the widest and most holistic sense of the word. So I think make sure you broaden your horizons as much as you can. Yes, keep F1 in mind, but start small. Go to, you know, here in Gloucestershire, we've got the Prescott Hill Climb. So if I'd been 16 years old wanting to get into motorsport, I'd have gone up there and said, I want to write a report on this for the paper for the weekend. You know, speak to your local newspaper, speak to your radio stations, put yourselves out there. And I think nowadays as well, I sound so old saying nowadays, kids have got, but of course, this next generation have got the world at their actual fingertips. You've got TikTok, you've got Instagram, you've got YouTube as a means to have a constant moving, working CV for yourselves. I think that's an amazing thing. So use that, but also build up all the experience around it as well, and your skill set too. Not very. That's a very long way of putting it all, but yeah, a lot of advice there, I'd say.
No, it's great. It's very good advice, and it's I can echo that completely. I mean, again, you know, I hate saying nice things about Harry. I hate doing it, but he's done a similar thing. I mean, he's you know, I remember he was working with Nikki Shields when she was in Formula E, just following her around the paddock, and, you know, just absorbing. Yeah. And then, you know, he did some stuff. He would do some really random presenting gigs, you know, standing in a park in London, covering someone getting their hair cut by some bloke who's, you know, trying to make a name for himself on TV, and, you know, really random stuff. But you've got to cut your teeth, haven't you? You've got to learn your trade before you get to the point where they're going to stick you in front of millions of people around the world in Formula One.
Exactly.
Now you've been at this a little while now. You have cut your teeth. You've made it to the pinnacle. You're at the best racing series in the world. There must have been some big highlights there. I imagine one of them is 2021 and that amazing finish that we all experienced. What can you pick out a broadcasting highlight for you?
I think so. 2021 Abu Dhabi was, and obviously we didn't know the way it was going to end and sort of what would happen since then as well. But in terms of the occasion, I woke up that morning and I think I'll just put some context on this. We just come through COVID, right? And on one Tuesday afternoon, 2 weeks into COVID, in which I've been locked down living on my own, my entire body of work for that year was cancelled, everything. So I suddenly had no income, absolutely no income. We hadn't had any government support offered to us just yet. I had started looking at part-time work and going back to sort of like full-time comms or marketing or something. So I just didn't think, I thought I'd had my lot. I wasn't going to come back. I thought that was it. And so to then make it back to F1 in 2021, and then for us to have the season that we had in 21, for it to finish on the last day of the last lap of the last race, I've never in my life felt that I was in a sporting environment in which the entire world was watching. I felt like we were the epicenter of the world that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to go down as one of sport's greatest controversies. It's going to go down as one of sport's greatest, you know, rivalries, greatest title fights. And to have been there, I felt so overwhelmingly privileged and grateful, given the fact that I really had thought that it was all over.
Yeah.
So I think that will always live with me. I remember I woke up on the morning of the final and I just started crying. Like, how am I here? I don't understand what's going on. It was incredible.
Yeah.
But yes. And then from there, so Silverstone, not last year, year before, so 22, as well as doing F1 TV, I'm also asked to host the stage and the fan zone. So we bring the drivers up on stage and present them to the crowd and you know, that kind of thing. And, it's always amazing whichever racetrack you go to. Some are more vociferous than others. But I walked up to stage, backstage at Silverstone, and peeked out, and you couldn't see one inch of ground. All I could see as far as the horizon were faces just staring at the stage. And I remember my heart was just going. This must be like Glastonbury. This is insane. And I've never in my life felt like the buzz like it when you walk out. And I remember the drivers walking out and just, they looked like they were floating on air. They were just blown away as well. I think George had like tears in his eyes, you know, George Russell. Like it was just one of those where I was like, I am so lucky to be doing this and to do what I do. And this is so amazing. That definitely stands in mind as well. And I think generally just covering some of the races that I've got to cover and go to some of the places that I've got to go to, you know. And I know the last season was a pretty dominant affair by Red Bull and Max Verstappen. But even within that, you know, Brazil, the finish between Sergio Perez and Fernando Alonso, Monza, in which you had the two Ferraris fighting the whole way for one last podium spot. It was just incredible. So, and to be in the paddock and on the grid in those moments is like nothing else. So I think I can't say all of it, but there are certainly a lot of the times in my job, it is a never-ending highlight and privilege that I get to be there doing it.
Yeah, it's a special place, a special environment to work in, isn't it? I remember I had a moment the year that Jenson Button retired, and I was pottering down the paddock minding my own business. And then it was the moment where he came through the garage and the team and various other important people from Formula One lined up in this kind of, they made two lines of people, and Jenson walked through the middle and everyone applauded. And aww. I just randomly found myself right at the heart of this gaggle of people. And I just remember I've been in the sport for a little while, but not that long. And I just thought, what the hell am I doing? Yeah. I didn't belong there in any way, shape or form. I just found myself there by accident. But it was amazing to be at a proper goosebump moment, you know, watching this all play out and then seeing it on TV later. It's a very privileged place to be, no matter what your role is in the paddock. Obviously, you mentioned the domination last year. It's continued this year with Max doing his thing. How do you look at this? I mean, I guess for some people, it's a tech race and they're like, oh, great, you've got the best car, you've designed the best machine. Congratulations to you. You know, this is incredible. Others that perhaps, I dare say it, you know, the Drive to Survive generation, generally speaking, are probably a bit like, well, we saw 2021 and that was amazing. And then what is this? Mm. What do you think? What's your take on it? I mean, how... is it bad for the sport? Is it good for the sport? Are you indifferent? Where do we sit with F1 at the moment?
So I think certainly last season, there came a point where we had to just stand back and go, what we are witnessing is a period of such dominance and expertise and genius and greatness and driver skill that we won't necessarily feel it now, or one doesn't feel it when you're living through it. But we will look back on these periods of time and go, that was utter greatness that we were witnessing from Max Verstappen, who is a driver. You basically have both driver and car at the moment in a league of their own. You see the way that Sergio Perez is unable to match what Max Verstappen is doing in that car. And that is nothing against Sergio Perez. That is to do with how much Max is extracting from himself and from the RB20. You see what Adrian Newey has done to push forward the regs once again, to push forward the design element of that car once again, to do what Mercedes tried to do to their car in 23 and failed. What we're seeing is extraordinary, but I appreciate that it isn't necessarily altogether thrilling when you've got one driver up the road winning by 22 seconds and kind of the best of the rest is the exciting bit. And it is exciting. I still think the fights absolutely. That we have for P3 and P2 and even for P10, you know, the fight for the points is so exciting. And when you know the people in the paddock, you can really appreciate and understand how much those points or a point means to a team. It is absolutely huge. And so I get invested in that. But I appreciate that isn't going to necessarily grab the headlines. And so I think that's where I'm at. I think we will look back and appreciate this for what it is. And it is extraordinary what we're witnessing. That car, Max Verstappen broke nearly every record going last year. You know, the team did as well. But yes, I wouldn't mind a more competitive race come the Australian Grand Prix, for example, or the Japanese Grand Prix. I wouldn't mind to see at least a sort of Vegas, Las Vegas style three-way fight for the win, rather than one driver or two drivers up the road. But we've seen gaps like this before through the Mercedes era, you know, Michael Schumacher winning, Sebastian Vettel winning. We know that this happens. And I think we do have a change of regs in 2026. They have to get those right. They have to get those nailed. And I think the other thing is the driver market is going to serve as an unbelievable background distraction for this season. We already have Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari. We already have rumors that Max will be going to Mercedes. Carlos Sainz has got to go somewhere. Ollie Bearman has just shown that he well and truly deserves a seat in F1 at just 18. I think there's so much bubbling under the surface to keep us interested and invested in, but the racing, yes, I wouldn't mind a more competitive race for sure.
Yeah, no, me too. And we'll see what happens. And you say, it's going to be fascinating to see the likes of Lewis going to Ferrari and what happens there. And yeah, lots of interesting narratives and storylines floating around. Now, obviously, we all know that Formula One's had a lot of issues lately and some have been damaging to the sport. But that aside, how do you feel personally as a woman in motorsport? Because we've had loads of women on here from all forms of motor racing, whether it be Formula One or down to grassroots levels and everything in between. Do you think that Formula One is or was or continues to be heading in the right direction as far as not just women, but diversity goes in the paddock. And I don't just mean, you know, drivers or mechanics, you know, I mean marketing, PR, comms, sponsorship, you know, all these different areas within the paddock. Are we heading in the right direction as far as you're concerned?
I think we are. I think we certainly are. When you look at certainly, you know, from my side of things, looking at news crews and reporting and television crews, there are, I think, women reporting or leading the coverage in most crews that you see. I can, you know, name so many different women who are working in that paddock and doing a brilliant, brilliant job. Despite, I think, what can be very outdated attitudes and sexist commentary from the outside looking in. So I you know, I rarely see a video from F1 YouTube where I'm leading the coverage and there isn't a comment that says she's the token woman. I know that is commentary that will come with anything that I present regardless. And I wish it wasn't the case. And, you know, but there's nothing I can do about that. It's going to happen. They are outdated comments that are going to and will be dying out for sure. But I see so many brilliant women in positions where they are either leading coverage, reporting, or indeed within key roles within a team as well, where they are doing exactly what they want to be doing. They're doing the jobs they deserve to be doing, regardless of any of the kind of outside noise. I'm very proud to be one of the women working in Formula One. I love what I do. I would do it regardless, you know, I'm not doing it because I'm a woman. I don't want to be seen as good for a woman. I think that's one thing I've said recently, is that I don't like the narrative of she's there because she's a woman and she's good for a woman. I just want to be a good broadcaster and a good journalist and good at my job, regardless of my gender. I wish gender didn't have to play a part in the conversations that I have around myself and my job and what I do. But I appreciate that we are still in a time in which we do have to talk about it.
Yeah.
And if in talking about it, this helps younger women and girls sitting at home wondering if motorsport is a place for them, then I'm all for this, absolutely. But I just want to crack on and do the job that I love to do and that I believe I should be doing. And there are so many women in the paddock who equally, like I say, are doing exactly the same. I think one thing that maybe will take time is I'd love to see more women in key, big managerial and leadership roles. I think that's something that we can continue to push for.
More of the Susie Wolfs and the, you
yes.
know.
Yeah, exactly.
And even, you know, the Chadwicks, because, you know, that Jamie will continue to go on and be successful. But I remember when you look at it from a 10-year lifespan or longer, I remember when I used to manage Jamie years ago and took her from British GT cars when she was racing with Paul Hollywood and flicked her across the single seaters. And I don't know, those people didn't know that, the Paul Hollywood's a racing driver.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. So Jamie was in an Aston Martin. Yeah. Jamie was in an Aston Martin, sharing an Aston Martin in a sort of pro-am capacity with Paul Hollywood, Beach Dean Racing. And he was a decent driver. So that she was racing with him. And we were thinking, you know, do we continue putting Jamie through the sports car route, or do we just go for it in single seaters? And we're like, no, let's go for it. Let's put her in single seaters. But I remember at that time, there was nobody else. And it was very much like, this is going to cause problems and people are going to raise eyebrows. And, you know, you're a woman in a man's world, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And I can't remember the year it was, but it must've been at least 10 years ago. To now, it's a completely different world, you know, in terms of participation. And we've got more than equal, and W Series obviously come and gone, but F1 Academy now with Nikki host doing the commentary on that. It is a different place. So I think it is heading in the right direction, and it's good to hear that you feel it is as well. Now, before we come on to our final three, let's turn our attention back to the track briefly. Looking ahead to the rest of the season, we've got Australia coming up, got a little break before then, but what do you see as the storylines unfolding? Obviously, Max is going to continue to dominate to a degree. We know that's pretty much a given. But are there any dark horses, any surprises? Can you gaze into your crystal ball and give us any clues what you think is going to happen for the rest of the year?
Interesting. Well, as I say, I think driver market is going to be crucial. That is going to be one of the key themes bubbling under, and it's going to spill out onto the track, because you have got something like 12 drivers out of contract who are going to be fighting for a seat. And not all of them are going to be at the same team they're at right now. Not all of them are going to be on the grid. That's for sure. So we are going to lose drivers from the grid for this season. I believe we will. And so that is something that I think we need to follow. That's a really kind of key story, and it's gonna raise its head at each race weekend as well. I think equally, look, I know the battle for P2, it is only the battle for P2, but I still think it's fascinating. And I think one of the key things from last year is that we didn't have any one team consistently P2. And I think that's part of the reason we saw such a gulf or such a gap to Red Bull, is because for a few races it was Aston Martin, then it was Ferrari, then it was Mercedes, then it was McLaren. So you had four teams who were very close together and sort of taking points away from each other while Red Bull continued to pull away. So I think if we establish kind of a P2 that can fight Red Bull, and I can see that in Ferrari and what they're achieving so far, and how close they are, they have got, you know, so far, and they're close in qualifying, they're knocking on the door. They certainly look to have improved their race pace. That's crucial. In terms of Australia, we've got a different track once again to what we saw in Saudi Arabia and what we saw in Bahrain. So I think we haven't yet seen the true pecking order for the season. We haven't yet established exactly how fast or slow each car really is. I think another sort of good storyline for the season as well is Haas. I think they came out the blocks in testing and said, don't look at us, we're going to be really slow, we're right at the back, don't worry about us. And they've been brilliant, and yeah, strategically brilliant in Saudi.
Yes, very much so.
In Kevin Magnussen backing everybody up to give
amazing
Nico Hülkenberg that point. And I think they're quick in qualifying, yes, as they were last season, but they also have solved that perennial issue with their race pace and their tyre deg. Or so we think, like I say, just two races. So we'll see in Australia, where we've got a different a track with different characteristics once again. So that'll give us a bit of a fuller picture of what to expect. But I think, yeah, keep a lookout for Haas on the charge, driver market, and the fight for P2.
Yeah, no, there's so many fascinating narratives. Not least, you know, Alpine, a works team,
right?
You know, propping up the back of the grid, which is you know, bizarre as it is disappointing. Yeah. Final one before we come on to our last questions. What's your favourite race destination and why?
Oof, that's tough. That is tough because I don't typically have a favourite. So I run all the tracks, right? So is this question the place I like to go to best, where I have the best time?
No, it could be for any reason.
Best track.
I mean, if you like running up Eau Rouge, you know, it could be Belgium.
I did do Eau Rouge. I did Belgium, 7 and whatever K of it last year in the pouring rain. I actually did really enjoy it. It was very cathartic. It was a good run. I would say I do enjoy Abu Dhabi as a season end, because it's a great atmosphere in the paddock. It's a real like end of school vibe. So that's always quite a fun one. It's kind of like we made it, we survived. Brazil last year I thought was brilliant. That was my first time fully exploring Sao Paulo, and I loved the track. The track is incredible. So I really enjoyed that. And I've got to say also, Silverstone is a home race for me, is amazing. Like it just is. It's one of the biggest occasions of the sporting year. And then equally Austin, generally as a city to go to, for everything you can enjoy off track in terms of what the city has to offer and the vibe there, Austin is amazing. I'm going to just list them all. I love it all. Zandvoort's got a
features.
Great back to school vibe, and everyone's on the beach before we start, and it feels like you're on holiday still. And yeah, I could go on and on. I could definitely sing the praises of most destinations. The one I will say though is Mexico. When I went last year for the first time, I was really ill. I had bronchitis. And so I basically spent one day resting, 2 days desperately trying to broadcast with no voice, and then race day, I had to stay at home and I didn't explore anything. So I'm very much looking forward to getting back to Mexico this year and just exploring a bit more and understanding the vibe of it, because I didn't even make it out, you know, into any part of the racetrack. I didn't understand I know it's one of the most incredible atmospheres. So
yeah. Proper FOMO.
Exactly.
I had that in Berlin for Formula E season 8 or 9. I can't remember.
Oh, no,
and I went to Berlin and I got COVID and had to stay I missed the whole thing, and they nearly canceled the race because I had contact with the race director or something. They were in the same room at some point. And so I sat in a hotel room for 2 weeks. So the whole Formula E community just disappeared and I was left there.
Oh my God.
Fending for myself in a hotel for a couple of weeks. It was extremely depressing.
Oh, I
feel your pain. Now listen, our final three. So we asked these to everybody and they throw up a myriad of different answers. First one for you. What's got you excited at the moment? Doesn't have to be anything motorsport related. Could be anything at all. What's got you excited?
So I actually have looked through these questions and you'd think I would therefore have prepared some really quick, witty answers for you.
But you didn't.
But I didn't.
No.
I looked at them and thought, I've got to think of something for that. And then I didn't.
Yeah.
What has got me excited at the moment? Is it sad that it's going to be work? But it is work. I think it is going back to presenting from a very like purely self-indulgent reason. Yes, I love my job and I love the sport and I love covering it. But equally, I think you start each season and go, oh my God, what if I actually can't, what if I'm actually quite rubbish at presenting? Yeah. Like, what if this is the year I get found out? So coming back and realizing I can still sort of do my job and I'm not awful has been quite a treat. So
sort of relief more than excitement. Yeah. Yes, I can still do it.
And I'm really excited to get stuck into the season. I think we've got huge plans for F1 TV and, you know, we want to kind of really stretch our legs this season. And I think I'm really excited for that. I'm excited to get stuck in with the gang and, yeah, really bring all of the stories of F1 to everybody. So I'm going to say getting back into F1 and getting back presenting, but that's really boring. It makes it sound like I just do work.
We'll take it. We'll take it. What's one lesson that your job has taught you that you think everybody should learn at one point in their life?
You are going to make mistakes, I think is one of the key ones. I am such a perfectionist. So I used to, if I stumbled over a word in a broadcast or if I made a mistake on air, it would keep me awake at night. Ridiculous. So I think making mistakes and letting them go has been a big lesson. I'm very, very prone to overthinking and overanalyzing and worrying about things. And so it's definitely a lesson in it is live. You cannot do anything about it. That's the joy and the fun and the chaos of it. Let it be. And just look, you know, move on. It's done, dusted, put it behind you, move on. But yeah, making mistakes is definitely one that, I've learned along the way for sure.
Yeah, very relatable. Final one for you. What are you scared of?
Blue men. For anybody who's seen that Vegas. Oh, have you not seen the clip from Vegas?
No.
God, that must have sounded so odd to you. Sorry.
It did. It did completely. So, yeah, carry on.
No, well, I thought I was going to say most people would probably think I would reply men painted blue. So in Vegas last year, the Blue Man Group, who you may have you heard of the Blue Man Group before?
Yeah. The guys with the black suits and the literally bald blue faces.
Yeah, so I didn't know what they were or anything about them. And suddenly they invaded our broadcast and were like in my face and it was terrifying. And I just completely lost it on air. So I would say generally men painted blue.
Wow.
invading our broadcast when we're live presenting in the depths of night in Vegas was definitely up there.
There's a practical joke in there somewhere for somebody.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a first.
On a deeper level, I would say failure, which sounds really... But I also know that failure is inevitable and that you learn a huge amount from failing. So actually, in the end, did you really fail because you kind of learned along the way? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But yes, I would say failure is definitely something that motivates me. I think people are motivated by success and by winning and by competition, but they're also motivated by trying not to fail. And I think failure does really scare me. Like I say, I'm such a perfectionist. I want everything to be just right. And I want to be at the highest standard I possibly can be at all times. And that actually simply is not possible. And perfection will never be reached. And it's kind of the striving for it that's actually... the joy of what we do and the process is actually why we do it rather than the end goal. So I think failure does scare me, but I also know that it's kind of a place in which you can learn and it's sort of the whole point of it all really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're all human. Everyone makes mistakes. And like you say, we learn from them. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone, go and download F1 TV, and yes, then you can keep up with Laura and Lawrence and Will and the rest of the gang, and keep up to date with everything that's going on in Formula One. Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.